Imagine you're an architect, right? And you have to fix this massive skyscraper that was deliberately built to lean dangerously to one side. You can't just tear it down.
Right, because people are still living in it.
Exactly. You have to somehow adjust the physics of the building, literally floor by floor.
And you're trying to pull off this like structural miracle with basically just a spreadsheet and a calculator.
Yeah, which sounds impossible, but that is essentially what South Africa attempted with the 2004 proposed amendments to the National Norms and Standards for School Funding.
Okay, let's unpack this. How does a country actually dismantle historical systemic educational inequality using, a highly mathematical pro-poor financial formula?
Well, it really starts with how the state distributes what they call the school allocation.
Okay, and that's just for overhead, right?
Okay.
Not salaries.
Yeah, exactly. It's state funds strictly for non-personnel inputs. So, textbooks, electricity, desks. And to distribute this money, the state uses a resource targeting list.
Meaning they rank the schools. They do. They rank every public school based on the poverty level of its surrounding community. They use hard census data, like income, unemployment, and literacy rates.
So it's kind of like medical triage, right? But instead of just treating the worst injuries first, the hospital is charging patients based on the average income of their zip code to like subsidize the trauma ward.
It's a really good way to put it, yeah.
Because the numbers here are striking. I mean, in 2006, the poorest 20% of learners, quintile one, they were targeted to receive 703 rand per learner, while the wealthiest group, quintile five, was targeted for only 117 rand.
Right. If we connect this to the bigger picture, that massive funding disparity is not an accident. Educating students in historically disadvantaged areas, it simply costs more.
Right, because the community wealth just isn't there.
Exactly. The formula is a deliberate mechanism to shift that operational financial burden away from the local community's wealth.
But hang on, 703 rand per learner in quintile one is better, obviously, but it isn't enough to fully run a school. If those schools still have to charge fees to keep the lights on, aren't we right back to square one for those poor families?
Yes, and that is exactly why the 2004 amendments introduced the concept of no-fee schools for the absolute poorest communities.
Oh, okay. So they just banned fees entirely.
Well, there's the mathematical trigger. Schools could only be declared no-fee if the state funding hit a specific adequacy benchmark, which in 2006 was set at 527 rand per learner.
Wait, 527 rand. I'm looking at these numbers, and that seems incredibly low. Like, how does declaring them a no-fee school actually help if the state is only covering the bare minimum? Isn't the state just enforcing poverty at that point?
Look, it's a valid criticism for sure, but the goal was really to ensure parents weren't denied baseline access due to absolute poverty.
Just getting them in the door.
Right. Plus, there were automatic safety nets. If a learner was an orphan in foster care or linked to a poverty-based social grant, they were automatically exempt from paying fees entirely.
Regardless of the school's benchmark status.
Yep, completely regardless.
Okay, but what about families who didn't qualify for that automatic exemption, but they were still, barely scraping by?
So they would apply for partial exemptions based on their income. And what's fascinating here is how the 2004 amendment provided a mathematical fix for a pretty serious flaw in the old rules.
What was the flaw?
Under the previous system, the fee exemption was calculated per child.
Oh, wait. So if you had three kids in the system, the math expected you to pay a percentage of your income for each one.
Yes, which obviously compounds your financial burden.
That actively punishes large, poor families.
Exactly. The more kids you had, the harder the math worked against you. So the 2004 amendment completely changed that calculation.
How so?
It capped the total family contribution as a single percentage of their income, regardless of the number of children. The sliding scale was adjusted, so the threshold actually became more generous the more children a parent had in the system.
Wow. So whether you are interested in policy, economics, or social justice, I mean, this deep dive is a masterclass in using raw data to systematically correct historical wrongs. It's literal social engineering through accounting.
It really is. You're replacing historical biases with a purely mathematical approach to equity.
Yeah.
But, that reliance on rigid data introduces a massive vulnerability to the whole system.
Right, because this entire model ties a school's funding strictly to the poverty score of its immediate geographic neighborhood. But wait, what happens to your perfectly calibrated spreadsheet when families from quintile 1 start commuting to historically better resourced quintile 5 schools across town?
The math completely breaks down.
Exactly. If the money is tied to the neighborhood but the kids leave the neighborhood, how does an equity formula even survive? Something for you to ponder until next time.